Hi, I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union, and welcome to the CapCon podcast. We are gathered here to talk about the challenging, somewhat odd case of Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, representing the North Country in the 21st Congressional District of New York. And I am happy to be joined by Emily Munson, our outstanding and no doubt exhausted DC correspondent, and Pete DeMola, newly arrived to the staff of the Times Union. Pete comes to us after covering Schenectady for the Gazette, but he is here on this podcast in his capacity as a former hardworking and award-winning reporter from the beautiful Adirondacks. So Emily and Pete, thanks very much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's start off with Emily, kind of to lay out the actions and the stances that Elise Stefanik, who is now in her fourth term, correct me if I'm wrong, in Congress, a rising star, somebody who has worked very hard to recruit and support women in the Republican conference with considerable success. But since the election, she has continued to stand alongside President Trump, including supporting his claims of a rigged election, correct?
Elise Stefanik has built a reputation in Congress for working across the aisle, but over the past year and a half or so, she's really emerged as a strong supporter of President Trump. And that came out during his first impeachment inquiry, where she served on the House Intelligence Committee and was a vocal defender of his and continued to defend him in an appointed role by Trump during his Senate trial. And so she's closely aligned herself with President Trump throughout her campaign. And after the November 3rd election, in which she handily defeated her Democratic challenger, she stuck closely by Trump and his claims of voter fraud. So for example, we saw that in December, she signed an amicus brief with over 100 Republican members of Congress supporting a lawsuit brought by the Attorney General of Texas that alleged that four swing states had unconstitutionally changed their election procedures to allow for mail-in voting. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court very quickly dismissed that lawsuit because Texas did not have the standing to bring it. But I also want to point out that there have been many other legal challenges in swing states around the country, and none of them have sustained allegations of voter fraud made by the Trump campaign or have identified unconstitutional actions that could have impacted the election result. So jumping ahead, Representative Stefanik did not acknowledge President-elect Biden as the president-elect until recently. And on Wednesday, she decided to object to certifying the presidential election results in some states. She said she had concerns with how the elections were conducted in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So she decided to object to the case of Pennsylvania when that was brought up on the House floor. And I'll just point out that that happened over a week ago on January 6th, the same day that the US Capitol was breached by violent individuals who came from a protest supporting Donald Trump. And they breached the Capitol, forcing lawmakers to go into lockdown. After they cleared the Capitol, in kind of an amazing turn of events, the lawmakers resumed their work of certifying the election. And it was then that Elise Stefanik decided to vote to register her objection. And, you know, she's firmly condemned that violence at the Capitol, but she's not gone so far as some of her Republican colleagues as to blame President Trump for it. And on Wednesday, she did decide to vote against impeaching President Trump for inciting the insurrection at the Capitol. She said this was a political ploy by Democrats, and she opposed the effort to remove him from office and to bar him from holding future office.
Now, Elise Stefanik's kind of turn to Trump, as it were, is a remarkable and fascinating development, because when she first ran in 2014, she was coming off of being a lead staffer for Paul Ryan, who, while without a doubt he was a conservative, he was not seen as among the most kind of rock-ribbed of the Freedom Caucus members. She had been, correct me if I'm wrong, a White House aide as well in the George W. Bush administration. And in 2016, her concerns, I think that's probably the most accurate word, about Trump could be seen in the fact that she did not even go to the Republican convention in Cleveland.
That's all true, Casey. Her closeness with Trump has emerged recently. It's helped her address certain issues that she's worked on with the Trump campaign. So I think she would argue that her close relationship with President Trump has been a real boon for her district. But obviously some Democrats in her district who are vehemently anti-Trump, he's a polarizing figure, do not feel that way.
So Pete, that's kind of a perfect segue to kind of turn to you and conversations you've had over the course of the week and change since the insurrection at the Capitol with, folks in your Rolodex, if anybody uses a Rolodex anymore, of Republicans in the North Country who had been, and many of them continue to be, four square behind Elise Stefanik. And I mean, in those calls, how would you describe kind of the range of opinion?
I would say, you know, Elise Stefanik carries a tremendous amount of influence in the North Country in terms of Republican officials. And people are always loath to criticize her. It's always been that way. Because again, these are officials who depend on the state and federal government in such like a unique region, right? The Adirondack Park. The reaction from these local officials was there was a lot of silence when, you know, directly asked. There was a few times when I thought the phone had gotten disconnected, right? The notable thing is that very few offered like a full-throated defense of the congresswoman, which would have been the case, I would venture, up until just a few months ago, in terms of offering like a robust, hearty kind of endorsement of her and her job as a representative. But I would say at best, the comments were tepid in terms of their support for her. What's really noticeable is the people who did not talk, the people who did decline comment. You know, we have two former North Country regional chairs of the state Republican Party who just did not want to talk. And I think that's telling.
It's a reminder of Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican, or at least not until these types of disagreements are out in the open.
I was going to say, it's kind of laid bare a lot of the tension that has been in the local Republican committee, you know, since the president arrived on the scene as a candidate, where you have a lot of these rock-ribbed North Country Republicans who are a member of the Never Trump, you know, crowd. First, they're rank and file members of the party, and many of whom are supportive of the president. And as one, you know, long-term operative told me, and this guy was one of the very first people that, you know, Congresswoman Stefanik turned to when she decided to run for office. He said, if she votes to impeach, then they're going to throw her out of the committee.
Emily, so much of this has to do with sort of the care and feeding of Fort Drum. That's a large military base in the North Country, an enormous employer, very important, key to the private economy of the area as well. Lots of people, in fact, kind of track Elise Stefanik's development as an ally of the president to a visit he made to Fort Drum. And of course, coming up, that we're talking Thursday afternoon, coming up this weekend, she's going to be back there with another fairly heavyweight member of the Trump administration.
Mike Pence is going to be visiting Fort Drum on Sunday. He's expected to make a speech. He's making a similar appearance in California on Saturday at a naval district where he's expected to address members of the military. And this is part of his goodbye to serving in the White House.
We have also reported on another form of a more definite negative form of blowback that Stefanik has received, and that is her ouster, her removal from the advisory board of the Kennedy School's Institute of Politics, which is, of course, part of Harvard University, which is Elise Stefanik's alma mater. Emily, can you kind of give us the basics on that break?
Elise Stefanik graduated from the Kennedy School's Institute of Politics in 2006. I believe she was a class president there and very active in the student in the body of students. She has subsequently served as a senior advisor to the Institute of Politics on a 12-member committee, I believe, with other notable people involved in politics. But on Tuesday, Harvard announced that they were removing her from that board. And what the dean of the Harvard Kennedy School explained was that he had had a conversation with Representative Stefanik about her decision to object to certifying the 2020 election results. And he asked her to resign from the board. She declined to step aside, and then Harvard decided to remove her. And the explanation from the dean of the Harvard Kennedy School was that in his assessment, Representative Stefanik had made public assertions about voter fraud in November's presidential election that had no basis in evidence. And he said she made public statements about court actions related to the election that were incorrect. Now, Representative Stefanik, for her part, kind of took this rejection as a badge of honor and said, you know, she was being driven out by the woke mob and Harvard was deciding to create a monoculture of liberal views at its university. She noted that she believed that all the members of the committee were now Biden voters, and she did not think that was representative of America.
Pete, you know the Congresswoman's district pretty well. I mean, what do you think it would take for, is it even realistic to imagine that either she is going to lose enough support within the party to potentially face a challenge from a more conventional or at least less Trumpy Republican candidate? Or do you think there is any chance, especially when you look at the pounding defeats that Elise Stefanik handed out to her Democratic opponent in the last two elections, and that's Tedra Cobb, that Democrats could hope that Tedra Cobb or any other Democrat could hope to best her if 2022 turns out to be a referendum on the Trump legacy?
That seat is hers as long as she wants it. I think that if she turned against Trump, she might face a primary. So one thing that I've always kind of struggled with is she's almost like a paradox in a way where she, you know, in the past 2 years, when she's really embraced Trump, she's not only embraced the president, but also the kind of culture of the grievances, right? The insults, getting into the culture wars, the ideological warfare, which really is, you know, a lot of what is at the heart of Trumpism, right? But at the same time, you know, while she's kind of crafting this national profile based on that kind of very, you know, hard-hitting approach in the district, you know, she kind of touts, you know, being a bipartisan. She's always been bipartisan, looking for solutions. And it's interesting because if you look at 538, which is often cited for, you know, how political politicians vote with Trump, you know, she actually, in the 115th Congress, she actually voted with the president 90% of the time. And that actually dropped to about 77%. And then, you know, one thing I find fascinating is she always kind of touts that the Lugar Center has ranked her bipartisan as well. I think the most recent report had her at 14th most bipartisan member. And that's kind of based on bill sponsorship and co-sponsorship. And she kind of uses that to position herself in the district as like the bipartisan leader. And even that designation is slightly problematic based on, you know, who's in the majority or minority, right? So, I mean, she presents these two different images, right? She kind of pivots to the fighter, the ideological warrior. And then, you know, when she's on the ground, she goes to the bake sales, the chicken barbecues, you know, works really hard with the retail politicking. So I think, to answer your question, I think she's well-liked in the district. I think Trump is well-liked in the district. And I think that, you know, if you have local officials who have been with her from the very beginning, you know, who are going to break with her, what does that ultimately mean? You know, I think it means that the party has to do some soul searching, and she has to do some soul searching for which way they want to go.
Emily, you cover her work in DC. You've also, you know, written about the sort of political battles that she's been in the North Country, especially with Tedra Cobb. She is, I think it's fair to say, a canny assessor of friendly versus unfriendly in her mind media. She has dodged North Country Public Radio. She had a public appearance last week just after the insurrection. North Country Public Radio noted that they weren't even informed of it. And you noted in a recent story about the Congresswoman that she had not responded to you. She had not granted an interview with you of any length of time since Election Day. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And I would clarify that from Election Day to last Friday, January 8th, it went beyond interviews. It was, you know, responses to emails and so forth. This is common among politicians. Many politicians have outlets that they turn to express their views where they feel very comfortable, where they feel they won't be challenged. In the past, Representative Stefanik has held calls that all outlets have been included in, but I'm not surprised by this. And she's also amplified her presence in national media since the November election and over the course of 2020, making more appearances on Fox, on the emerging news outlet Newsmax. So she has many ways to get her message out to her constituents, including social media, and she doesn't necessarily have to rely on newspapers to do that.
Well, she should, but that's just me talking, and I edit a newspaper. Listen, thank you both very much for taking the time to share what you've gleaned and your expertise. We very much appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks very much for listening. Once again, I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. You've been listening to the Capital Confidential podcast. Have a great week.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.